Roundabout with Tony Barnfield on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Time to get hold of the author of the play opening tomorrow at the Cambridge Arts Theatre, and that is Peter James, who I hope is on the line now from Brighton. Peter, a very good afternoon to you.
Afternoon to you too.
We are very much contemporaries, and I remember at school winning the English Reading Prize, which perhaps led to a certain future, and you won the Poetry Prize at Charterhouse, I believe.
I did, when I was about 16, I think.
Had you always wanted to write?
Always, right from the time I was about 7. I used to keep a notebook by my bed and write my great thoughts into it. I think I remember the first thing I ever wrote, which was, "Life is a bowl of custard, it's all right until you fall in."
A variant on "Life is a bowl of cherries," of course.
Absolutely.
You have got quite a dedication to Sussex, and in particular to Brighton. That, I think, is where you were born.
Yes, I think writers write best about places that they know. And I was born and raised in Brighton, so I've always set the majority of the kind of heart of my novels in and around Brighton and Sussex, and as I did with the novel that the play The House on Cold Hill is based on.
And you've a great respecter of the police, because I gather your publisher, Macmillan's, gave Sussex Police a police car. Is that the whole story?
Yes, well, actually, I've given my Roy Grace series, which I guess I'm best known for. Mm-hmm. I've worked very closely with Sussex Police pretty much for the last 30 years. I got started getting friendly with them, actually, back in the 1980s when I got burgled. A young detective came to take fingerprints, and he saw one of my early books, and he said, "Oh, if you ever want any research out with the police, give me a call." And since then, I've worked very closely, primarily with Sussex Police, also with the Met, because for me, research is absolutely key. I think, you know, people who read or people who go to the theatre are intelligent people by the nature they're doing that. And they want to not only see a great play or read a great book, they actually want to learn something about the world in which we live at the same time. And I have a new Roy Grace novel just out, and that's about the terrible growing crime of internet romance fraud. Mm-hmm. And the House on Cold Hill play is very different, but it's very much inspired by and based on a haunted house that my former wife and I lived in for 10 years during the 1990s.
And do ghosts exist, is the obvious question?
Well, I think I would be very hard pushed to say they don't, because the house, it's interesting, the play itself very much mirrors what happened to my wife and I, and that we'd always been townies. I'd always kind of lived in London, Brighton, and in the States as well, and we were living in Brighton, and I had my first really successful novel, supernatural thriller called Possession, in 1988. We did The Dream, which was to buy a big old wreck in the country, and the day we moved in, I was standing in the front porch with my then mother-in-law, she was a magistrate, but she had a kind of fey side to her. And we were guiding the removals man, and I just suddenly saw along the hallway a shadow move. And she looked at me and said, "Did you see that?" And I knew she'd seen something. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to spook my wife out, because she particularly was nervous about moving to this remote, isolated house from always having had neighbors before. So I said, "No, I didn't see anything." And the next day, I went down. My wife, she was a lawyer, and she went off to work in Brighton, and I went down to get a cup of coffee, and I saw tiny sort of pinpricks of light just floating in the air where I'd seen the shadow. And I saw them repeatedly over the next day. And then I was walking our dog in the village the following day. I didn't say anything to my wife, because I thought maybe I'm just imagining this. Mm. And the following day I was walking our dog in the village, and this old boy came up to me. He said, "Oh, Mr. James." I said, "Yes." He said, "You just bought the manor." And I said, "Yes." He said, "How are you getting on with your grey lady?" And I said, "What grey lady?" And he said, I used to house sit for the previous owners. He said they had a place in Ibiza, so they were always away during the winter. That room at the end of the hallway, before you go in the kitchen, we made into a snug. And I was sitting there one Sunday night in an armchair watching telly, and this woman in grey silk crinoline with a really angry face just came out the wall, glided towards me. She flicked the side of my cheek with the edge of her dress, stung my cheek, and she vanished in the wall behind me. He said, I was out of there. Wild horses wouldn't get back in your house. I thought, okay. And I still didn't say anything to my wife. And then the following Sunday, my in-laws came to lunch, and I took my mother-in-law aside, and I said, what was it you saw the day we moved in? And she described this woman exactly the same. And then I told my wife, I said, you know, I have actually seen this strange thing. And she said, well, actually, I'd seen her several times, and I didn't want to tell you to spook you out. And that kind of was what gave me the inspiration for The House on Cold Hill. And the play kind of mirrors... The play is it's both a ghost story, it's a thriller, and there's a lot of fun in it as well, and some great comic moments. But it very much mirrors what happened in that it's about a couple from Brighton, Ollie and Caro, played by, they're just brilliant, it's Rita Simons and Joe, and they have done the dream. He's sold his website business for a lot of money, and she's a solicitor in Brighton, and they buy this big old wreck, and they've got a teenage daughter who's really not happy about moving out into the countryside from Brighton. She's got all her friends in Brighton, and the day they move in, she's on her mobile phone on FaceTime to her best mate in Brighton, and she's saying, it's bloody horrible here, I hate it, I want to go back to Brighton. And her friend suddenly says to her, Jade, who's that old lady standing behind you? And she spins round. Of course, there's nothing.
You are a natural storyteller, I think.
Well, I'm very impressed that you won the school prize and your teams too.
Well, there you go. That's another story. When you write a book like The House on Cold Hill, do you ever think there's a follow-up? Because, of course, there has been The Secret of Cold Hill. Or that maybe it would make a play?
No, I don't. Because I think that if you try to think of either a book as being translated in some other medium, it might constrict you, because when you write a novel, the great thing about writing a novel is you don't have to be constricted by any play or any film budget.
Yes.
If you want to have a train crash or whatever, you can have it. Well, it's on a sort of on a play budget, they might say, could somebody fall off a bicycle instead?
Yes.
And also, you have to, on a play, for a play to work, you've got to restrict it to quite a small number of characters. So with The House on Cold Hill, you know, novel, there are about 35 characters that feature. In the play, there are 9. Mm. And again, in the novel, there are locations all over Sussex and environs. Yeah, and there's a key scene in the novel in which the father is driving his daughter Jade to school, and she turns to him in the car and says, Daddy, do you think ghosts exist? And she then tells him that she reckons she saw something in her room the night before. Of course, you can't have somebody driving across the stage, so it's a very, very different process. But I think theatre works wonderfully, particularly for something scary like The House on Cold Hill, because you've got this shared experience of all these people in a fairly, you know, confined environment, and when there is something spooky, the whole audience feels it. And they feel it in a nice way, because although it's a scare, they're safe because they're surrounded by other people. Mm. And it's the same with humour too. If something funny happens, you get that wonderful kind of laughter that ripples around, and people kind of share that experience. And I didn't ever think about a sequel, but then it just, the idea came to me of a natural sequel to it, which is The Secret of Cold Hill, which is coming out on October 3rd.
I was not surprised to see that you quite often do involve cars, often police cars, because you're a bit of a collector, aren't you?
Yeah, I've always been a petrol head, I guess, all my life. But the police car came about because Sussex Police have been so incredibly helpful for so many years. And I said to my publishers, you know, I think we ought to give them something, particularly with all the budget cuts, and I know they were kind of suffering. I said, we should try and give something back as a thank you. And they said, what do you have in mind? And I said, well, car might be appropriate. So I approached Sussex Police, the commander of Brighton and Hove, and I wasn't expecting them to say yes, and they, it jumped at it. And since then, actually, we've now given a second car as well. So there's two Peter James cars that go around Brighton. I think all my Roy Grace books have dead in the title, and because they're often used going to crime scenes and murder scenes, the one thing they don't have them is dead. So they have Peter James, number one for crime, on the side.
Oh, right. And of course, Roy Grace has been a very long-time companion of yours. How did you create him initially?
What happened initially was I was introduced in about 1996 to a young detective inspector called Dave Gaylor in Brighton. And we just hit it off, and we got on really well. And Dave had a really creative side to his brain, which is something I've discovered subsequently about really good homicide detectives. They have quite a rare combination of two completely contrasting personality traits, in that they are both incredibly anal, because to be a good detective, you have to be anal. You have to be able to piece together painstakingly hundreds of pieces of a puzzle, which is what every major crime is. But at the same time, so many major crimes are solved by real kind of blue sky, out-of-the-box thinking. And Dave had that incredibly creative mind. And over the next 7 years, he rose to become Detective Chief Superintendent, basically head of major crime for Sussex. And in 2002, my publishers asked if I'd ever thought of creating a detective as a central character. So I went to Dave and I said, how do you feel like being a fictional cop? And he loved the idea. You know, he is my real-life Roy Grace, and he doesn't look like Roy. But a lot of Roy's character and the way he works is based on and inspired by Dave. And we've worked together very closely ever since. You know, we have a routine when I'm planning a book. We sit down together, same table in a pub with a new Moleskine notebook, and we kind of plan out the basic structure.
Gosh.
And the characters. And then I go away and I write the first 100 pages or so. He reads, and then we sit down and we'll go through how Roy would really think and act as a detective. That really helps to get the authenticity to me is so important.
Now, I think most people know you very much for your novels, because they go right up the bestseller charts always. 35, I am told you've written. Perhaps The Secret is going to be the 36th?
I think something like that, yes.
But you have been involved as well in the film world, and our paths didn't precisely cross, but I think you probably went to, I think it was Ravensbourne Film School, was it?
I did. It was the first film and television school in England at the time.
And that was in Bromley.
Yes. You were there too.
I was at Stockwell College of Education. Doing film and television studies, and that would have been 1968 to 1970, roughly.
God, you were there like 1 year in advance of me.
Well, we've not met before, but interesting how these things do cross sometimes.
We must meet and have a chat sometime.
Yes, that was the first place that was going to teach teachers how to use closed-circuit television around the Inner London Education Authority, so interesting paths. Is there a book in you that has never come out? You know, in the mind.
Yes, there is. In fact, I'm going to start working on it quite soon. It's, you know, my mother's family were Jewish refugees from Vienna in 1938. And we have a family mystery relating to that, about a family member who went over the Niagara Falls. And it's all connected, and we don't know whether she jumped or whether her husband pushed her.
Oh.
And so I'm going to start work on that later this year.
So that's a trip to Niagara Falls booked, is it?
Yep, going there in July.
Well,
I'll come back.
Well, I wish you every success with that, and indeed with The House on Cold Hill, which opens at the Cambridge Arts Theatre tomorrow evening.
Can you mention my new Roy Grace novel, Dead at First Sight, just out?
Perfect. What is the storyline this time round?
It's about internet romance fraud. I was actually asked to write it by Sussex Police, raise public awareness, become one of the fastest growing crimes, about people who join online dating agencies and meet somebody they think is real, but actually is a scammer, and they will tease them over many months, and eventually start asking them come up with sob stories, and they're very, very clever, the scammers. You can actually go to college in Ghana and learned to be an internet scammer.
Good heavens. Well, that's Dead at First Sight, another story there. And that's when is that out exactly?
It's out this week.
Excellent. Peter James, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much. Nice to talk to you.
Really great to talk to Peter James there. His play, The House on Cold Hill, is on at the Cambridge Arts Theatre all this week at 7:45, with matinees on Thursday and Saturday.